Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Seiko. Zach, how are we doing this week, my friend?
Hey, we're doing well. Penn State picked up a win, a dominant win, and two more games to get to the promised land, right? Went out, and everything's going to be great.
That is exactly it. Two more wins, and what I've been hoping for all along, Zach, a home playoff game. To me, that will be the greatest thing for the fan base anyway.
Yeah, and it would certainly help Penn State's cause, because I think any team that's going to come to Pennsylvania, potentially a night game, who knows what the weather's going to be like in terms of rain or snow, that wintry mix, but temperatures in the 30s, maybe even the 20s. That's not going to be at the Tennessee. Tennessee was on the sideline against Georgia, huddling together near warming devices because it was 55 and breezy. So what is 30 going to do to those SEC teams?
25 and a wind chill of 15. That's what I'm predicting for it, Zach.
Field advantage is real.
In that scenario, definitely. Let's take a quick look back, though, at this Purdue game. I think going into this kind of game, the fear is playing down to the competition, not looking sharp. Definitely not the case in this one. They came out fast.
Yeah, and that's something what we discussed a few weeks ago, that I don't think Penn State was going to have these slow starts down the stretch of the season. People needed to give them almost a grace period. New offense, new defense, they're going to make mistakes, they're going to have to make adjustments because they are not used to playing in these systems. So trial and error, trial and error, trial and error. Hey, this worked, this didn't, we could do this better, we could keep that out of the game plan. And the only way you're going to do that, you can learn so much in practice, but it's the actual games where teams are actively trying to score against you, not the iron sharpens iron, because the opponent, the enemy, does not care how you do. They don't care what you're trying to improve upon. Whereas in practice, it's different. There's that, hey, we're all trying to make each other better. The opponent is trying to keep you down. I digress. But my point is that Penn State, okay, slow starts and second half adjustments were the story of the first half. But I said, hey, Jim, by the time they get to this bye week, and now that they have a handful of games to look at and say, let's do this better, let's take this out of the game plan, now you're seeing that. Competition also helps. Purdue is not the same as USC or West Virginia. And frankly, Bowling Green might give them a run for their money. Who knows? Not Kent State. But Purdue is not the most challenging team. However, it is a Power 4 win. It's a road win. It's a Big Ten conference win. And the fast starts continue to be. Against Ohio State, they started out fast. That was 10-0. I know no moral victories. I know they didn't win that game, but that can be classified as a fast start. Extremely fast start against Washington, and then you follow it up with Purdue. So you can expect more of the same against Minnesota, Maryland, and then when it matters the most, a playoff game.
And I think these two things are tied together, Zach. The fast starts, and I'll give you credit. From early in the year, you talked about with the new coordinators on both sides, This was going to take a little bit of time. Yeah. It feels like they're hitting their stride right now. I know Purdue, they're not just a bad team. They're an awful team. Yeah. And, you know, they can't physically compete with a team like Penn State or Ohio State or Notre Dame, teams like that. But they just were making incredible mistakes, blown coverages, all of that type of thing. So winning big is not the point. I saw a team that was, and it was the same way against Washington. They were more efficient. They didn't beat themselves. We didn't see the penalties. We didn't see the self-inflicted mistakes, the self-inflicted wounds. Mm-hmm. And it feels like with the new coordinators that, yes, now's the point, and it's a good time to be doing this. They're hitting their stride.
Yeah, it's all about building momentum, and that's what separates good from great teams, because Penn State has not hit its ceiling. And they're still, because you have to look at it as, and I think that's why most people, most spectators, and even people that are at the top, ESPN, Fox Sports, right, that are analyzing these college football teams, and they look at 6 weeks worth of results, and they're like, okay, that's it. They've hit their ceiling, or they've hit, or they haven't gotten to rock bottom either, because teams get better and get worse over the course of the season. Well, Penn State's in a position now where you have a new offensive coordinator, but an elite offensive coordinator. You have a new defensive coordinator, but an elite defensive coordinator. And you have all these superstar caliber players that are second, third year guys that can only get better at a point. So when you look at a redshirt senior, and some of them have that quote unquote breakout season, right? But more often than not, you kind of hit your plateau at that point. It is rare that you take a giant leap forward. You might get better in some areas, but not that giant leap forward. It's the sophomores, it's the juniors, the second, third year players that Penn State has. Drew Aller, Nicholas Singleton, Katron Allen, Amari Evans, Trey Wallace. Look at Tyler Warren is kind of that exception. He's been in the program the longest of the bunch, and he's had that true breakout. But it wasn't because Tyler Warren became this different football player overnight. It's because he always had to share reps with Theo Johnson or Brenton Strange. He was called the best kept secret a season ago. He was called the Penn State secret weapon by CBS Sports, by James Franklin for the longest time. And now here we are seeing what happened. But Abdul Carter, Denai Dennis Sutton, Kobe King, Jalen Reed, all right, all these guys that are in their third year of playing football, and now they're situated and, oh, they're turning into superstars. Like, they are legitimately turning into superstar players. So Penn State was always destined to get better down the stretch. It was just a matter of how quickly were they going to figure it out.
You know, Zach, as we go through this week after week and I speak to you, I am now convinced more than ever, you sneak a look at my notes, okay? I am convinced of that, because that's exactly...
Well, then stop sending to me early on.
You know, well, I don't have to. It seems to be telepathic here that you pick up where the direction I want to go,
right,
which is, you mentioned the handful of players that I wanted to talk about who, again, along with the team, I don't know if the individuals are picking it up and the rest of the team following, or the team as a whole and the stars are being displayed more so. But let's go through a couple of them. I want to hit on Abdul Carter, who early on, there were some people who were critical of that move to defensive end, overreacting to one game, a couple offsides calls. But it now just feels like he's reached a point where he's unblockable. Yeah. Well, unless you hold him.
He's the best edge defender in football. He's the best defensive end in football. And it took three more. I'm trying to think of when they actually announced that change. Was that was maybe April or May of this year? Okay, so now we're in November. So this was a 6-month process. For most players, that would take a full season and then maybe next year to get situated to a new position change. Linebacker, defensive end aren't too different, because Abdul Carter was handling those responsibilities for the past two seasons where he was a stand-up blitzer, so he already had the elements to his game. But it's the small nuances that really do make a difference. It's not just, okay, well, you put your hand in the dirt, you put your hand in the ground. That's not it. There is technique, there is footwork, there is hand placement, and then it's actively, and then Abdul Carter's not routinely going up against offensive tackles. So you have to, again, trial and error. Hey, this move worked. My footwork was like this. What can I do to adjust it? That's a testament to Abdul Carter for taking on the challenge and becoming he is the best defensive end, the best pass rusher in football right now. You take away the 2 weeks, those first 2 weeks against West Virginia and Bowling Green, where he looked atrocious. It was bad. The analytics say it. He was bad. But ever since that, at that point in time, he is the best statistically, and he's second in the country right now in tackles for loss overall for the season. And then Deion Barnes gets a lot of credit, because Abdul Carter was working with Manny Diaz and the linebackers, and then Deion Barnes, first time that he's coaching him up, and in 6 months, he goes from, and in a matter of weeks, he goes from potentially a liability, we need to make a change, to superstar, game wrecker, back to what he was, and honestly better than what he was at linebacker. So Deion Barnes deserves a lot of credit. And James Franklin and Tom Allen for making the decision, for looking around and saying, our linebacker core is a question mark, and we're going to take our best linebacker and move him to defensive end. That's a gamble that a lot of coaches probably wouldn't make. And look how it's paying off.
And it really is. And you're talking statistically, but also he more than passes the eye test. If you watch the game, if you focus on him, he's beating his defender pretty much every down, Zach. And I was only half joking that it's holding on every play, because it practically is.
It practically is. Ohio State, Washington, now Purdue. That's the only way to stop him.
And that bodes well for the team going forward. And you talk about the star players, and there's some obvious ones. Abdul Carr is an obvious name. Somehow a five-star quarterback, in my opinion, has been underrated. Drew Aller, I think he gets punished for his past performances. He gets punished for the couple big games, you know, Ohio State and Michigan a year ago. Mm-hmm. But you stack his numbers up right now. In fact, I did just a quick look because I was curious numbers-wise against Will Howard, Dylan Gabriel, and Drew Aller. And they are all very similar. And Drew Aller, I think, more than passes the eye test also with his performances this year.
Yeah, I don't understand the Drew Aller criticism. I think it just kind of comes with the responsibility. He's at Penn State. He's a five-star quarterback and was rated 24/7, had him as the best player overall, or a top three player overall in that class of 2022. So it's just going to naturally come with the territory. I also think that people, and that goes hand in hand, I think people just like the fact that they can dunk on Penn State and on a former five-star quarterback who's just 20 years old, a second-year starter, and say, he's terrible, he's not going to get better, Penn State should have gone into the portal because the Drew Aller experiment failed. And it's lazy analysis. It is a lazy interpretation of athletics and the game of football. And because it's just an opportunity to kind of, I think, because where is this criticism with Nico Emiliava over at Tennessee? Because that's the exact same thing here. So Drew Aller is doing everything right and then some.
All right, that's going to have to be it for quarter number one. Lots more to go with Zach in quarter two. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, he's Zach Seiko. Zach, we finished up quarter number one. I kind of cut you off there at the very end. We were talking about Drew Aller, and I think you brought up the point. I think he gets lumped in. It's the same way James Franklin has become a national target. And I think Drew Aller gets drawn into that. And I think it's unfortunate because people aren't paying attention. As Penn State fans, appreciate this guy. You're getting a pretty good quarterback there. Now, another guy who is just the opposite. By opposite, I don't mean not talented and getting attention. He's very talented, but he is also getting the attention he deserves, and that's Tyler Warren. You know what, Zach? It's not just the big plays. It's the efficiency. When he catches the ball, he ends up getting a first down. And one of my favorite stats in the USC game was when he had 17 receptions, he was only targeted 20 times. This game, 8 targets, 8 completions. So he's getting a lot of attention. But if anything, I almost feel like he's underused because he's been so good at that wildcat quarterback position. I think I'd be using him more often there.
Well, let's not look past the fact that he had 3 carries for 63 yards and a touchdown. He was Penn State's leading rusher at the end of both the leading receiver and the leading rusher. Tyler Warren is not just building a campaign for the best tight end in college football anymore. He is building a campaign to be the best, to be viewed as the best overall player. Heisman. I do mean that. He has a case for the Heisman. Is it tops? Am I trying to sit here and say that there aren't players that are more deserving? No, but he should very well be. If this continues in the final 2 games where Penn State is, if they finish 11-1, they get into the college football playoff, and heck, Jim, there is an outside shot that they could be back in the Big Ten championship game, tiebreakers going in their way, in their favor, and then they win the Big Ten championship. The Heisman isn't just, I mean, I look at a value to the team as well. Because, okay, if your team's 1-11, but you're winning all the statistical categories, does it even really matter at the end of the day? You have to kind of combine those two together. So how much are you contributing, and then how much value are you providing to the team? Tyler Warren is catching the football, running the football, snapping the football, throwing the football. Travis Hunter isn't even doing that stuff. Wide receiver, defensive back over at Colorado. And you can make the same argument. Well, Tyler Warren isn't playing defense and intercepting passes here and there. I've seen Travis Hunter get beat in coverage and give up touchdowns as well for every interception that he's gotten. So there, Tyler Warren is doing things that Travis Hunter isn't doing, and vice versa. But they are in the same conversation. They are doing things that are so uncharacteristic that make them Heisman contenders. And there's no top tier quarterback in this group. Dylan Gabriel's probably going to be invited to New York for the ceremony. That's fine. But there isn't this, oh, he's the face of college football type of quarterback. There isn't even anybody close at this point in time. And I think when you have that wide open of a gap in this Heisman race, it absolutely opens up an opportunity for Tyler Warren to at least be in the conversation. It's not about just being the best tight end in college football anymore. It's about being the best overall player. And I think Tyler Warren has been that for Penn State this season, aside from Abdul Carter defensively.
You know, what's interesting, a couple things on that Heisman discussion. You mentioned Dylan Gabriel. Earlier, I told you I did kind of a deep dig into the statistics of Gabriel, Will Howard, Drew Aller. Do you know, Drew Aller's quarterback rating is higher than Dylan Gabriel's is. Yards per completion higher, yards per attempt higher. Now, Gabriel throws the ball more often. He has more yards. Again, not. I think if Oregon stays ranked number 1, undefeated, yes, the quarterback of that team typically goes to New York. But it's kind of nice this year that I don't think the national landscape is being dominated by the quarterbacks. And we are getting to hear about players like, you know, Travis Hunter at Colorado, the running back at Boise State, and Tyler Warren. Don't think he's going to win it, but I think he deserves to go to New York. And however number they take, you know, 3, 4, 5, however number they take, Zach.
I mean, honestly, My case is for Ashton, being objective here, as much as I'd like to see Tyler Warren do the unthinkable and win the Heisman as a tight end, it's most likely not going to happen, and I can't sit here and say that there are other players that are more deserving either. I look at Ashton Gentry, who you mentioned from Boise State, 25 touchdowns. He has a 400-yard gap between himself and the next leading rusher. I will tell you somebody that really should be in the Heisman conversation but isn't. And that's Bryson Daly, the quarterback over at Army. Army is undefeated. Yes. And Bryson Daly is, I think he's the second leading rusher. He is, let's see, where, because I want to get this right. He is, okay, So he has 1,000 yards at quarterback rushing the football. He's averaging 6 yards per carry and has 21 rushing touchdowns. So that's what I meant to say. He has the second most rushing touchdowns as a quarterback, and then adding 640 yards through the air, 7 touchdowns, and an interception. And Army is undefeated. So by what I'm describing for what I believe the Heisman winner should do, Bryson Daly objectively should win this award, not Travis Hunter, Tyler Morin, even Ashton Jeanty. It's Bryson Daly, the Army quarterback.
Well, if he wants to get into that discussion, they have to beat Notre Dame.
Yes, they would.
And then he would get into the discussion, which, by the way, would make things very interesting if they did beat Notre Dame. Let's talk about, you know, I always mention the national narrative and how it's fascinating to me how something becomes just, again, the narrative. I don't know who starts it, who starts something, then says it, and then it's just everybody follows. But one of the big national narratives, and I just wanted to get your take on it, is this competition now between the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference. And the narrative is the Big Ten is overrated, and the teams that are specifically pointed out are Indiana and Penn State as being overrated, and the Southeast Conference is this spectacular conference where the only reason why they all have 2 losses is because they're beating each other up, Zach.
Yeah, I definitely agree that the Big Ten is top heavy. I mean, you have Oregon, yes. You have Ohio State, Penn State. But if those teams were playing against each other routinely, right, you just had Oregon and Ohio State. It's not like you have Penn State versus Oregon and then Penn State versus Indiana, right? The schedule just broke that way. But you do have Georgia and Alabama, Georgia and Texas, Georgia and Tennessee, Ole Miss and Georgia, right? I understand the argument, but it's not to say that the Big Ten is overrated. Oregon, Penn State, and Ohio State are just as good as Texas, Georgia, and Alabama. You put these teams on a neutral site field, the three best from the Big Ten and the four best. I want to include Indiana in this. I think they're a good football team as well. They can win in a lot of different ways. They are not a one-dimensional team. But the top four of the SEC and the top four of the Big Ten are comparable. If you want to say that the entirety of the SEC is slightly deeper, yes, because I don't look at the SEC and I say, oh, well, they have their own version of Purdue. They do not have, as far as I'm concerned, I want to double check. Okay, Mississippi State would be their own, right? It's just the nature of college football. There are winners and there are losers. So for every Purdue that is in the Big Ten, there's a Mississippi State in the SEC. There's a Kentucky. And let's not forget, 1-6 Kentucky in the SEC. That's an SEC play. They're 4-6 overall. But 1-6 Kentucky almost took down Georgia. They lost 13-12. You don't see Penn State in those situations. They beat Bowling Green convincingly down the stretch. You were on the edge of your seat if you were a Georgia fan against Kentucky, okay? So if Penn State went down to the wire and only won by a field goal against Purdue, I'd be very concerned. But we ignore that, Jim. We ignore that in the case of Georgia that, oh, they almost lost. Or a Vanderbilt taking Texas down to the wire and beating Alabama. We neglect that. But all the other, but Penn State losing by 7 points to the number 2 team in the country and a national championship contender preseason, and nothing has changed, that's an issue for Penn State, and they shouldn't even be ranked in the top 12 for some reason.
Well, a couple points I want to follow up. I do agree with you. The Southeast Conference is probably deeper, but Ole Miss has a loss to Kentucky, by the way.
Okay, so there we go.
Tennessee has a loss to Arkansas, by the way.
Yeah.
And one of the things that gets hit upon is the quality of win. You know, how many good wins do you have? Georgia, I think, has this argument. They've played like 4 highly rated teams and are 2-2.
Yeah.
But do you know how many top 25 wins Texas has?
I think they either have 1 or none, and I think that's Vanderbilt.
Is Vanderbilt ranked?
They were ranked 24th at one point.
I'm talking about the current rankings, which, you know, okay. It's like Michigan was a top 10 team at one point. Yeah. I don't think that counts.
No, Texas doesn't have a ranked win, but they're above Penn State.
Right. By the way, Penn State does have a ranked win. Illinois is now ranked 23rd or 24th. Again, Illinois is not a great team. I think the bigger discussion, in my opinion, Zach, is even within a conference, look at the difference between Texas's schedule and Georgia's schedule, mm-hmm. night and day. Yeah. Texas has got such a break, and I think that's a huge difference. Right, we have less than a minute to go. One quick question. What are we looking at for Minnesota's competition, and what's your pick for the game?
Yeah, we didn't even get into the Minnesota game. I will keep this fairly simple. Penn State outclasses Minnesota. Minnesota's a one-dimensional team. I liken them to Washington and Wisconsin. Good, solid defenses, but no. If you take away the ground game, they cannot keep up in this game. So expect Penn State to start fast and overwhelm Minnesota and basically take them out of the blueprint that they need to win games. I will go Penn State 31-13. I think that they beat Minnesota comfortably. Minnesota, the things that they need to do in order to win, Penn State's just going to take that away.
Very good, Zach. Thank you very much. That's going to be it today with Zach. Stick around. We have Sean Gold and the Picks of the Week coming up. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold. It's quarter number three of our show. Sean, this is where we take a look at our picks from last weekend. It's not pretty.
It's not. This is not a week I'm looking forward to talking about right now, Jim.
You and me both. It's not a great week. Here are the stark numbers. You were 1-5. I'm the winner at 2-4. Sean, the expression I think we're searching for is I was the cream of a poor crop this past week.
Yeah, it was not a weekend I expected, and we're going to talk about some of these games now, and I'm still baffled by some of them, but you know what? We live and we learn and we move forward, and we're going to see what went wrong right now.
Well, what's interesting is we often talk about this in the post-mortem when we go over the results, is there are games that we may lose, but we say, you know what? If I had to pick it again, I would do it the same way. And then there are games where we go, yeah, I should have known better. And some of the games, it's just the result. I think we had the right idea, but it just didn't go the way we expected. Or there's that back door at the end. Let's get right into it instead of me going through all these explanations. First up was Utah and Colorado. Colorado was a 10-point favorite, and I know my thinking was Utah's defense was pretty stout, going to be pretty good. It would be tough for Colorado to win by that many points. Colorado put up 49.
They did, and what's funny is if you told me that Utah was going to score 24 in that game, I would have been pretty comfortable with Colorado plus 10, and to the Buffalo's credit, I mean, they just took off, and my worry about Utah was their offense. Their defense was the issue in this game, and Colorado scored at will. A touchdown in every single quarter is not something you see a lot on any level of football a lot of times. And, you know, Colorado 14 in the first, 21 in the fourth, but 7-7 in the second and third. Like, they scored when they wanted to. in this game, and that was really surprising to me.
And it so this was a game that just entirely did not go the way either one of us thought it would. So we'll have to deal with that loss. And the funny thing is, both you and I, we've been on Colorado quite a bit this season. And I remember the word, I abandoned them. And maybe that's a lesson for this coming week, Sean.
It just might be, and that's what I was thinking too. We've talked so highly of Colorado all season long. It's been, you know, kind of in our fandom part, Penn State number one, Colorado number two right there. We have loved the Buffaloes, and we both, for some reason, got off that train last week, and it burned us.
We'll see if we could get back on it. All right, next game was, again, we both lost, was Clemson at Pitt. My take on it was Clemson has – after that blowout against Georgia, they've been a much better team. I know they did have another loss in there, but I just thought Pitt, their bubble burst. They lost two games in a row, and this is another one. Clemson, early in the game, had a big lead. They looked like – I felt pretty comfortable with this one, seeing that lead that Clemson had. Pitt came all the way back. Now, Clemson did end up winning. They didn't cover it. This is one of those picks, Sean. If I had to do it again, I think I'd do it the same way.
I think I would, too, and it really frustrates me. You're up 17-7 going into the fourth. I felt comfortable with this game, and it's more of a disappointment on Clemson's offense. I thought they were going to score a lot better. We've seen Pitt in the past couple weeks, you know, give up 48 points to SMU, and I was thinking, you know, Clemson's offense is just as good, if not better, than SMU's. And they just couldn't score the ball, and that's what really frustrated me in this matchup.
And now Pitt, earlier in the season, they had some really big-time comebacks to steal wins, and although they didn't steal the win, they stole the cover in this one to our dismay. So not a good one there. Next up, let's go for the one game that you and I both had. We both won. Penn State over Purdue. It was when we talked last week, it was a 28.5-point spread. I think it actually got up to 29.5 points in a lot of places, Sean. Penn State put it away. I was a little scared, though, at one point when Purdue scored their touchdown late in the game or in the fourth quarter to make it 42-10. I was so scared of that backdoor cover against Penn State's backups.
I was too, and I got to share another story on this game with you. Before the game, I found Purdue team total under 9.5 at plus 170, and I really like that because Oregon and Ohio State, I think, both shut them out or held them to a field goal. And Penn State, when they gave up that field goal, I was feeling really good. And that touchdown at the end, we still covered this spread, so I was happy about that. But I thought I was going to get a nice cash on under 9.5 points for Purdue, and I was livid when I saw them score that touchdown there.
Because you do know, yes, it's Penn State backups were in the game. Not that their backups aren't very good, but Purdue was still playing. They still had their starters in there. And like I said, my big fear was that one more, that they would get that late score, cover the spread, even though it was pretty obvious Penn State was more than a four-touchdown better team. But it also just also brings up, boy, that Purdue, it's not just the lack of talent. They are not well coached. They are not good at all.
No, it's a program that I don't know what direction they need to go in, but they need to change whatever they're doing right now because it is not close to working. And I hate to say that, but it's true.
One of our colleagues, Dustin Schutte, is a Purdue guy, and he has talked about getting rid of this coach for a while now. And I was like, boy, that's a little bit tough. This is only his second season, hasn't had much chance. Watching them play and watching the, you know, Trey Wallace standing alone in the end zone, watching those plays where Tyler Warren runs 50 yards and was not even touched. Same thing with Bo Prabula with his long run for a touchdown. It was just an ugly performance by Purdue. Things that it's not a case of lack of talent. It was poor coaching, poor execution, which you have to put on the coaches. All right, the next game up, was Tennessee at Georgia. Georgia was actually a 10-point favorite in this one. And, you know, I took Georgia. You took Tennessee. Georgia did cover. In hindsight, I think I was very lucky to win this one, Sean.
Well, you know, Tennessee getting shut out in the second half is crazy to me because they, you know, 17-17 going into halftime, I'm at least thinking this is going to stay close and, you know, Tennessee will be able to cover this game. To Georgia's credit, they made the adjustments that Tennessee didn't in the second half, and it showed on the scoreboard when you, you know, blanked Tennessee in the second half and Georgia scored 14 to pull away and cover the, a pretty big spread for a game that was, you know, two elite teams in this one.
It was – you have two elite teams, but what you also have in that Southeast Conference are these teams that you don't really know what you're going to get. Georgia, into the season, I think many of us thought one of the two or three most talented teams in the country. Now, to Georgia's defense, they've had a rough schedule. Besides Tennessee, they've also had to play Texas, Clemson, Alabama, and Ole Miss. And to only lose two, they're essentially 3-2 in those games, which is actually really, really good. But, you know, this is also a team that has struggled at times, made you wonder which Georgia was going to show up. I was banking on the good Georgia to show up, and eventually they did. The second half, they pulled away, got me a win. The next game, this is one of those games that kind of it makes me scratch my head a bit. This was Kansas at 3-6, Kansas at 9-0, BYU. Top 10 ranked BYU, 9-0. And BYU was merely a 3-point favorite in this one, which is one of those absolutely crazy spreads. But it's so crazy, it makes you go, do they know something we don't? Apparently they did.
I think that was definitely the case because it made no sense to me. BYU at home, their season, I wouldn't say season exactly on the line in this game, but they had a lot to play for there. They're trying to get into the college football playoffs, and you lose to Kansas. As you mentioned, a 3-6 Kansas team that has been nothing but disappointing this season. We came into the year thinking Kansas might have a high-flying offense, and they haven't. And somehow, against BYU, they played their best, and BYU laid an absolute egg in a game where they could not afford to do that. So I was shocked by this one. And like you said, you know, maybe we should have seen, why is this point spread so low? There's something we don't know. And clearly that was the case because Kansas went out 17-13, dominated the second half there, and, you know, shut out a BYU offense that had been good all year.
Well, here's what's going to be fun in this week's picks, which we're going to get to next quarter, is we talked about getting off the Colorado bandwagon. We talked about maybe learning our lesson here about Kansas being, you know, undervalued or overvalued, whichever way it turns out. We are going to have to make a decision on that this week because it's going to be Colorado and Kansas. All right, finally, our last game from last week, again, we both lost this one, was LSU at Florida. LSU was a 4.5-point favorite. This was one, Sean, going into it, we looked at LSU as one of those teams, they're fighting for that playoff spot. They can't afford another loss. And here was Florida, maybe playing a bit better than had been expected, but their season is ultimately over. That was the feeling. We were wrong. Florida won this one outright.
We were on this one, and it was right where I had wanted it to be at halftime, tied 10-10. We said last week LSU is just going to be able to wear this team out in a four-quarter game, and I was thinking that's exactly how this thing is going to play out. And then the fourth quarter, Florida 14, LSU 3, that's the difference in that game. And it just makes you wonder, like, what was LSU doing? Because we know Florida's not a great team, but obviously, I guess LSU is just not as good as we had thought they were going into this one.
Well, and my question is also the other way. Is Florida better than we thought? We all knew going in they had this awful schedule, awfully tough schedule. They're now at 5-5. Hey, they've got a chance to get to a bowl game. They seem to be putting things together. Their coach is going to come back next year. Well, guess what, Sean? We get another shot with Florida when we come back and make our picks for this week. Stay tuned for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim, he's Sean from Sean's Take, and we are getting ready to make our picks for this upcoming week. Sean, it wasn't a good week last week. We've got to do better this week.
We 100% do. Listeners, we're going to do better for you. That's all I'm going to say. We're going to do better.
All right. Let's start with the really big game, which is Indiana at Ohio State. And last week, Sean, before this past weekend's games, I said there were essentially only three really big games left in college football. And one of them was this Ohio State-Indiana game. Indiana comes into this undefeated, but with a lousy strength of schedule. They somehow manage within the Big Ten to avoid Oregon, to avoid Penn State. They've avoided the better teams, and they've avoided Ohio State until now. Ohio State, on the flip side, big win at Penn State. I had someone describe this to me as they have the best win in the country over Penn State, or one of the best wins, and they have the best loss going to Oregon, the number one team in the country, and just barely losing that one. Ohio State, a 12.5-point favorite in this one. Sean, is Indiana for real?
You know, Jim, I really think they might be. And I'm not saying they're going to win this game, but when I was looking at the numbers, Ohio State – they've gotten some big wins, but they haven't been blowing teams out like we've seen them do in the past. Their unders in these games have hit in six of their last seven games, which to me means that Indiana has a shot at keeping this thing a little lower scoring. And it reminds me a bit of the Penn State game. And that's how I think this game is going to go. I think Indiana is going to be in it from start to finish. I think Ohio State wins, but I think the Hoosiers are a really good team. And more importantly, a really well-coached team. And for that reason, I'm going to take Indiana plus the points.
You know, I agree with all you said. I think Indiana is better than a lot of people are giving them credit for, because they're not just winning games, they're blowing people out. They are winning. If a really, you know, the traditional really good teams had the schedule Indiana had, they would be winning the way Indiana has been winning. The thing of it is, I think Ohio State is still the more talented team. I think they're better at the line of scrimmage. We saw a little bit of that against Michigan, where there's big-time players on Michigan's line of scrimmage. I don't think Ohio State's going to blow them out, but I do think that they will get it to a two-touchdown spread, where we might see that, you know, 24-10 type score in this game, or 31-17, where it gets to two touchdowns. I'm going with the Buckeyes. Hold my nose and say, let's go Buckeyes. All right, next game up, Southeast Conference game, Ole Miss at Florida. Ole Miss is a 10-point favorite, double digits. And this is, again, another one of those games like we had with Florida last week when Florida was playing LSU. Here's Ole Miss. They've got a playoff berth at stake in this game. They've got to win this. Florida State, they're 5-5. Last week, that's what we were saying. Guess what? Florida, beat LSU. How do you see this one with Ole Miss?
It's a really interesting situation because, as we mentioned, the Gators, they surprised us last week, and maybe they're not as bad as I thought they were. I'm going to refuse to believe that right now, though. The last time we saw Ole Miss was a 28-10 win over Georgia. And like you said, playoff berth is kind of on the line in this game. This is huge for Lane Kiffin right now. I think that's really underrated in this matchup. Lane Kiffin has a lot on the line for his coaching career and what his legacy could potentially be right now. This is one of the best teams he's had. He needs to get the job done. And the market's telling us that they're 10 points better at Florida. I'm going to listen to Vegas on this one and agree that Ole Miss is the better team and that Lane Kiffin and his squad are going to get the job done.
All right. Got you down for Ole Miss. This is another one. I'm going to disagree. I'm going with Florida on this one. And here's the thing. You don't know what you're going to get from Ole Miss. Remember, they lost to Kentucky. They also lost to four-loss LSU. So that loss is looking worse and worse. So what are we going to get from Ole Miss in this one? And I do think Florida has figured something out. The freshman quarterback plays well. The coach is coming back. I think that may have created some resolve in this team. And they do have something to play for, a bowl game, which I don't think anyone thought would be the case for Florida when this season started. I think there's one more upset left in the Southeast Conference. I'm thinking this one might be it. I'm going with Florida. Maybe they won't win, but I think they'll at least cover. All right, next up. It's the Nittany Lions at Minnesota. Penn State, you know this. There's an ugly history for Penn State at Minnesota. Twice they've gone into Minnesota and had their four-team playoff berth dashed, or at least one time, and previously a potential national championship back way back in 99. There are those things that go on. So now this is Minnesota's biggest game. Until last week's loss, they've been playing pretty well. They have a bye week to get ready for this one. Penn State, a 12.5-point favorite at Minnesota. What are you thinking, Sean?
Jim, Penn State knows the history of this matchup, and they know this is not a week where they can screw up. They're playing good right now, and I know they did what they were supposed to do against Purdue, but they have to be a confident football team. After putting up points against Washington and Purdue, I think Penn State's coming into this game confident. They're the number four team in the country. They should handle business. They know what this win means for them. They're looking at the schedule. Minnesota, Maryland, get two wins, dominate both victories. You get a good playoff seeding right there. I think that's what happens for Penn State. I think they cover the spread. They know what's at stake. I don't think they mess it up.
I'm with you on this one. I believe the way they've played the last 2 weeks, they're playing their best football right now. They're getting healthy. What gets forgotten also, I think, with Penn State, remember again, two new coordinators. It may have taken a little while for them to get the rhythm, get going. And remember also, early in the year, we talked about those slow starts. Guess what? That seems to be a thing of the past. They're coming out of the gate, playing really well. And if they could get that kind of start early, I think they pull away from Minnesota, win this one handily. I've got Penn State also. Next up, we again have BYU, this time at Arizona State, and Arizona State is actually the favorite of this. They are the three-point favorite at home. Arizona, the absolute surprise team in the Big 12, Sean.
Yeah, they've looked really good, and it's been a great story. This is a hard game. I'm not going to lie. This one is a difficult game to read. What is wrong with BYU is what I've been asking myself when I look at this. That loss to Kansas, as we talked about in quarter three, is crazy to me. The Big 12 shakeup is real. We talked about in prior weeks that anybody can beat anybody, and we've seen that in the Big 12, and this is another game where that can happen. BYU, to me, has still been the front runner for this conference for most of the year. After Kansas State fell off, it's been BYU the entire way. They've got to get back on track, and they don't have to win this game to cover. So in a crazy conference where two teams I think are pretty even, and maybe even BYU might be a little better, I'm going to take the underdog in this one. So give me BYU plus the points to have a bounce back week and at least lose by a field goal or less.
I'm thinking that BYU was – there are different kinds of undefeated teams. And as an example, I mentioned earlier, Indiana winning going away in many of their games made me more of a believer in Indiana, even though I didn't pick them this week. BYU, I think, was just, they've been fortunate. That good fortune ran out last week. Arizona State playing well. I'm going with Arizona State in this one at home. I know my typical logic would be so evenly matched, I'll take the 3 points if you're giving them to me, but I'm going the other way. I think Arizona State is good enough. I think their streak of playing well will continue. I'll take them. All right, here's our good friend Colorado. Talk about having a lot at stake. They are at Kansas. Remember last week, Kansas, we didn't take them. We should have. Colorado, we didn't take them. We should have. Colorado is a 3-point favorite on the road in this one, Sean.
I can't go against them here. The offense is just too good. I don't see Kansas pulling off the upset like they did against BYU. Colorado knows they're going to be locked in. And how do you stop this offense? I don't think Kansas is going to be able to. I'm going to go with Colorado. I'll keep it simple right there.
I'm going with Colorado also. I had some thoughts on Kansas, but you know what? Colorado, I think they could smell it, that playoff berth. It's right there in front of them. And when you have big games, you count on big-time players. Who has the big-time players? We say it every week. Colorado does. So I'm going with the Buffaloes also. Next up, Army, Notre Dame. They're playing at Yankee Stadium. I believe it's Yankee Stadium. I know, or is it East Rutherford? I know they're playing on a new, allegedly neutral field. It's Army, Notre Dame. Notre Dame is a 2-touchdown favorite.
All I got to say is I'm getting flashbacks to Notre Dame Navy. Navy was chugging along, and that Notre Dame game was the turning point in their season. I'm worried it's going to be the same thing for Army. They've been chugging along. They're looking really good, but Notre Dame is just a different level, and I think history may repeat itself right now with how that Notre Dame Navy game went. So, Jim, I'm going to go with Notre Dame to cover the spread. I would love to see Army do it, but I'm going to go with Notre Dame.
You know, I'm going to second that. I'm trying to look up real quickly where this game is going to be, and I can't find it right off. But I'm with you on this one. Army has built that undefeated season in games against absolute nobodies. They've not been challenged yet by a good team. Deja vu all over again. We saw it when they played Navy. Notre Dame played Navy. It was no contest, and I think reality will hit here. You also have the situation where Notre Dame is looking for style points and want to confirm that they belong in the playoffs.
100%, and it is Yankee Stadium. Just check that, and so it'll be an exciting environment, but I still think Notre Dame gets the job done.
I'm picking Notre Dame here also, Sean, although I'm going to be rooting. I'm going to be yelling, go Army the whole way in this one. I think there's a lot of teams that are going to be saying, go Army in this one. All right, Sean, that's it for our picks. Fingers crossed that they're better than last week's picks. We've been saying that a little too often. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.